Welcome to Rooting For You, a seasonal gardening podcast for non-experts. I'm Tess, and I know nothing.
And I'm Elise, and I know some things.
Each week, we'll chat about one gardening topic, and then discuss the effort-reward payoff by asking, is the juice worth the squeeze? Just a heads up, there might be a bit of swearing in this episode. You've been warned. If you've seen our Instagram, you'll know that Elise's rhubarb is prolific. And I don't know if it's the crop or the gardener, but we're about to find out. Now, we got a little sneak peek into growing rhubarb in our intro to winter episode last year, and this is a really cool process, so I can't wait to get into the nitty-gritty of growing rhubarb now. So Elise, tell us about your prolific rhubarb. Is it the crop or is it the gardener?
I wish I could say it was the gardener, but actually... I think with this one, it's the crop because I inherited the rhubarb.
And that is good news for everyone else if it's the crop.
If it's the crop. Yeah, exactly. So I inherited one rhubarb plant with the property, which was amazing. And then now I've split it into about six. So I suppose the splitting part I had a hand in, but the initial plant, no. And because I had the rhubarb plant from the very beginning, I've actually been tending to it and growing it, harvesting it back when I had no idea what I was doing. So I think that's another really good win for people, is that if I could keep this plant going and thriving and split it and do all these things back in the day when I was
still starting out. Yeah,
absolutely still starting out. So I do think it is actually a really good beginner crop.
Fabulous. Should we get stuck into this business of splitting it? Because I bet you've lost a few people already on that.
Well, I feel like first we need to just make sure everyone knows that rhubarb is a perennial, stay in the ground all year round. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why I think it's really easy, because we plant it once and then we're going to have it forever. So that is a massive, massive, massive plus. It grows to be a 1 meter tall bush. So you've probably got a good idea of what it looks like because you've seen mine. And for everyone listening, if you've seen it on our Instagram, it is, yeah, like a dome. A 1 meter domed bush with all these red rhubarb stalks sticking out the middle and then the big leaves on the end. That's what we're growing.
So you need a little bit of space for it.
You do need a little bit of space. Yeah. We'll get into that later, but it's about a meter apart you're planting it. Although you can grow it in pots. We'll talk about that later too. So when Tess is talking about the splitting, what's going on here is that because it's a perennial stay in the ground all year round, every year it actually continues to grow bigger and bigger and bigger. So one of the easiest ways to get your own rhubarb plant, or in the case of what I did, if you want more than one rhubarb plant, is to actually split the plant into two. And the time we do that is winter, when the plant is dormant. What this basically is we dig up the plant, we put a spade in and just slice a piece of it off. Simple as that.
So if you're coming across a rhubarb plant somewhere at a friend's house, and they've never done this before, so this is your first time.
Yeah.
Talk us through step by step. So you get your shovel out.
You get your shovel out. You have to actually dig up the entire rhubarb crown, so the root system.
So how far out are you digging your hole, and how big is this hole? Because it sounds like hard work.
Yeah, you get a bit of a sweater, which, you know, in winter's not too bad. It depends on how big the plant is as to how big this hole is. But for my monster plants, I'm probably digging 30 or 40 centimetres from the centre of the plant out in a circle. They're not deep rooted, so you do have to go quite far out, but you're not going that far deep. And then you just dig it up like you're trying to dig it out of the ground. And you are digging it out of the ground.
Yeah.
Effectively. Then you pull the entire plant out of the ground and it looks like an octopus, kind of. Like it's quite a bit like a basketball center and then tentacles, thick roots coming out.
Should you, if there are any existing rhubarb stalks on the plant, should you prune them off before you start this process?
Doesn't matter. Unless there's so many that they're in the way, then harvest some. Yeah, good question. But you don't need to.
Okay.
Then once we've got it out, we're just going to get the shovel and basically cut it into four, into six, just into massive chunks.
Oh, so you can do more than two.
Yeah. Yep.
And you just... there's no science. It's just straight down the middle.
Straight down the middle, in half again. Obviously, if it's quite small, you're not going to get into six. But if the plant's big enough that you're doing this, you could, I mean, frankly, you could probably get it into 10 and it's going to be fine. It's literally just like a little piece of root that you need, and then it will keep growing from that. It's an animal.
So you end up with halves of your existing rhubarb plant with, so each half has a head, maybe some stalks if you've left them on, and then its own root system.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then you put one of them back in the same spot because it was clearly happy there. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones you can plant out in pots or plant in somewhere else in your garden or gift someone, whatever.
Oh, gifting someone. That's cute. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. If you want one, I can gift you one.
Do I have to go and dig it up myself?
Well, so this is quite a tangent because this is for people that already have a rhubarb plant. But actually, if you've got rhubarb plants that are very established like I do, it's in the plant's best interest to every 5 or so years dig it up and split it. It can get too root-bound, kind of too big in the one spot, so we don't want that. So actually, I will often do this over winter, not just to gift people, but because to maintain my plants as well.
Mm.
So no, you won't have to dig it up because I will have already done it. But having said that, you only have to do it once every 5 years. So considering I've got about 7 rhubarb plants now, which FYI for anyone listening, that is too many. Like no one needs 7 rhubarb plants. I probably just every year do one of them as like a maintenance job. And then, you know, after 7 years, we'll get back to the first one again. Now, this is all good and well for people listening who have a rhubarb plant or have someone that has a rhubarb plant. What about everyone else?
Yeah, doesn't know a friendly neighbour with a rhubarb plant.
Who knows no one with a rhubarb plant? That's fine. We've got you covered too. So with these crowns, which is this basketball situation we're digging up with the roots, sure, we can do it that way, but we can just buy the crown,
okay,
the root system. Now, this is similar to, I suppose the best analogy I can give is when you grow a dahlia. We talked about buying a tuber and you plant that. When you're planting a daffodil, you buy a bulb and you plant that. I suppose almost like
a potato?
Yeah, a bit like a potato. Yeah. You buy a piece of root material effectively that then grows. Now, the reason we're doing this episode at the moment in winter is because the rhubarb plants are dormant, the rhubarb's just happy hanging out. It's not in growth phase. It's just in dormancy. So almost like a bare-rooted fruit tree.
Oh, yeah. That was a great discussion about the bare-rooted fruit trees that we had last year, and that you can kind of move them around and they're a little less fragile in this winter period. So
that's exactly the same with these crowns. So people will sell them at this time quite cheaply because it's easy for them to kind of maneuver them, post them, whatever it is. And it's a good one for you to plant at this time because exactly like with the berry and fruit trees, we can't do a lot of damage to it because there's not much going on with it.
Mm.
So we buy a crown. We can buy them online. We can buy them from the nursery. They're pretty cheap. They're not going to come basketball sized like mine. They're probably going to be the size of a potato.
Okay.
You can grow from seed.
Mm-hmm.
I would not recommend it. Right. Crowns are really cheap, really available, and they're going to be give you 2 years of growth.
Ah, okay. On.
So yeah, if you grow from seed, like you're not going to be eating a decent whack of rhubarb for like 4 or 5 years. Whereas from a crown, you're probably going to be eating a modest amount in the first year and then a decent amount in the second year.
With the ones that you buy, I mean, you might not know this because you just split yours normally. Are they split or have they been grown from seed, do you think?
Yeah, good question. I don't think they've been split because they're quite small. So when you split it, you can kind of see that someone's like put a shovel through it. These look kind of whole and intact on their own. So
and probably it doesn't matter though.
It doesn't matter. But the important thing is either way you get it, it's going to just, give you a couple of years on. Mm. And there aren't many plants that you can get a couple of years of growth on for not a big price.
Yeah.
Like if you think about like a fruit tree, if you buy a fruit tree that's a couple of years old, like it's going to be at least $100.
Mm.
You know, a rhubarb crown might be $5 or something.
Mm.
So it is definitely, definitely bang for buck
to get the crown.
If you want to go from seed, be my guest. But and you know, you're just going to grow it the same way you're going to grow anything else from seed, but probably don't.
Yeah. The juice isn't worth the squeeze.
No, the juice is not worth the squeeze. There are different types of rhubarb, of course.
Oh, I mean, I've seen the different colours.
Well, the different colours are actually sometimes to do with the type and sometimes to do with the temperature when they're being grown. So the same plant can actually produce different colours, but the type will absolutely play a role in that.
Mm.
You get some that are better producers in winter, some are better producers in summer, some have bigger, thicker stalks, some have smaller, arguably tastier stalks. It really just depends.
Mm.
Horses for courses. I have a couple called Winter Wonder, I think they're called, and I quite like them because they do really well through winter. They actually produce a lot of rhubarb, whereas other varieties will just go completely dormant. And given that in summer or in the warmer months we have so much food available in the garden, the fact that I can actually turn to the rhubarb harvest in the winter months I think is a really big plus. So I like those varieties, but whatever suits you. But just remember that there's not just the one rhubarb that you can pick. Yep. And in crowns, you will probably get four varieties you can choose from. I'm sure seeds you can get more, but four varieties is plenty. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about where we're planting them. What kind of conditions does the old rhubarb like?
It likes a sunny spot.
It's
the full first sun. Thing. Full sun, yep. Oh, really strong afternoon sun can sometimes be problematic in summer, but I'd say unless you're in a really hot place, it's not a worry. Just go for your absolute full sun. Mm.
And we have spoken about like options like shade
cloth. Yeah, a bit of shade cloth like that. In the heat of summer on a 40 degree day could be good, but I never have provided any shade for mine. Never. Too much effort. The thing with rhubarb though, it is actually better grown in cool climates.
Okay.
So for us in Victoria, we are very, very well suited for rhubarb growing down here. If you're in northern Queensland, somewhere really tropical, you might struggle with your rhubarb.
Stick to the pineapples.
Exactly. You guys got bananas, mangoes and pineapples, you're fine. I would say if you do really want your rhubarb in the warmer areas, just try and find the variety best suited to warmer areas, not the variety that you necessarily like the sound of the best. Whereas down here in, you know, Victoria, Tasmania, New Zealand, those kind of things, we can grow whichever one we like. It's nice when us cool climate gardeners get a win. So we're going to sunny spot. The other thing is rhubarb is a really heavy feeder, likes a lot of nutrients. And because this is a perennial, stay in the ground all year round, we're kind of only going to get one shot at building this soil up. So we want to make sure it is really, really good when our crown is planted in it. What do I mean by really good? I mean, lots and lots of compost and lots of animal manure. Rhubarb loves compost. If you ever get your hands on mushroom compost, this is what commercial mushroom producers actually grow their mushrooms in. So it's not something you're going to have laying around at home, but should you have access to some, and you can buy it, of course, at nurseries, rhubarb really, really likes mushroom compost.
Is it compost for mushrooms or compost made out of mushrooms?
It's the byproduct of growing mushrooms.
Isn't just a mushroom a mushroom? Oh, like, what's the byproduct?
It's the material the mushroom is grown in.
Oh, like, okay, so like the soil, for want of a better
word. Well, because mushrooms aren't grown in soil. Like, they're grown. You know how you can grow mushrooms out of coffee grounds, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So once the mushroom is harvested, then what they've got left is this material that they've grown it in, whether it be like composted coffee grounds or.
Okay. And you can't grow a mushroom again in the same. Well, this is a massive tangent of rhubarb.
You actually can grow a mushroom over and over again to the same spot to an extent, and then your mushroom material will be spent.
Okay, and then you put your mushroom material on your rhubarb, come back to rhubarb.
Exactly. Because massive tangent. Massive tangent. But if you ever see mushroom compost, that's what it means. It is not for growing mushrooms. It is.
There you go.
Mushrooms are done. Rhubarb loves it. So you're going to really work that compost and that animal manure into your soil. Rhubarb doesn't like poor drainage. So if your spot is really boggy, it can actually cause the crown to rot in the ground. Now, I am in a very wet area and my rhubarb is planted in clay. I did work the clay quite a bit before I planted in it, but it's not grown. My rhubarb's not grown in a raised garden bed, which is one of the few edible crops I don't grow in a raised garden bed. It's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you work that soil, you work those enrichments into it, you're going to have the drainage thing sorted. So give it a really good feed before you plant it. Then we need to plant it. 1 meter apart for mm-hmm. each crown. Given how big the rhubarb plants get, and given that rhubarb isn't on your heavy rotation in the kitchen, would be my guess.
Mm.
Frankly, one plant is going to do most people fine. I have more rhubarb than anyone could ever want. Although, slight tangent, if you look at the price of buying rhubarb, especially organic rhubarb, it is incredibly expensive considering how little you get. So
what a rort.
I know. So yeah, the fact that we can grow it so cheaply, if you really like it, maybe go 2 plants. You've got your crown and you're going to plant that 3 centimetres down.
Okay. So the top little, I assume that there's going to be shooty uppies off the crown. They are 3 centimetres below the surface level.
Yes.
Okay.
But very interesting point about the shooty uppies, because what can confuse people is the crown does have an up and a down way, and you've got to make sure you plant it the right way. Now, if you're planting this towards the end of winter, towards spring, it'll probably have shooty uppies that'll give it away which way's the top.
Mm-hmm.
But in the dead of winter, it can actually be a little bit difficult for a beginner to see because it doesn't have that obvious shooty uppie.
I had pictured that there would be, if you were splitting it, there'd be roots coming off it.
Yeah.
So we're talking about if you just buy the crown from a nursery.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
It has roots coming off it too. It's like a potato with heaps of roots coming off it.
Mm-hmm.
But when they've gone through the post, they've been in a bag, they've been squashed up, the roots can kind of be sticking in all directions. So you've got to kind of really pay attention.
Yeah.
Once you've done this once, you know it, like you know it for the future, but the first time you're looking at it, it's like, hang on, is this up or is this up?
Hmm.
So kind of tease the roots out and kind of work out naturally which direction they're heading. And obviously the down direction is how you want the roots to be placed. Kind of like when we talked about the bare-rooted fruit trees last winter, you want to kind of tease those roots out. Mm-hmm. So when they're going in nicely splayed. They're not going in like a tight root ball. We want to encourage those roots to grow outwards. So we kind of lay them outwards.
Yeah. And just going back to what you said at the beginning of the episode, that they are not deep growers. They grow out, not down.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, bang on. There will be potentially, if there's not full shooty uppies, there might be little white pink tips that stick up. They will be obviously the up direction. So that's another way to look at it. If you're really, really, really struggling, Google some photos, because if you plant the crown upside down, this is not going to work. That's going to be a fail.
Yeah, okay.
But I do think most of the time for most people, the fact that you know you've got to get it right, you'll get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to just dig up 3 centimetres of soil. We're going to lay those roots out, cover it up, lots and lots of good stuff in the soil. Could put a little bit of mulch, bit of compost on top. Whatever, but that's not really, winter's not really the time for that.
Mm.
That's more spring.
So when will we start getting shooty uppies? This spring, if we're planting them in winter?
Yep, absolutely.
And we can eat them this spring?
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty quick turnaround.
You're not going to have many to eat, let's be honest. Oh, actually, I will go back and say before we talk about harvesting, the pots. You can absolutely put your crown in a pot. You mm-hmm. can grow rhubarb in a pot. The thing with pots, and I've said this for most crops, is the smaller the pot, the smaller the plant, the smaller the rhubarb.
Yeah.
So if you use a small pot, you are going to have a rhubarb plant. It might be quite happy, but as far as you making a pie out of this, unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
So the bigger the pot, the better. If you can get a pot that's 0.5 meter diameter, that's going to grow a really decent amount of rhubarb. But anything smaller than that, it's really going to be more ornamental or more like for you to give yourself a little pat on the back that you're growing some, not going to be a huge amount of food. And the stalks themselves are going to be quite small.
But 0.5 meter in diameter isn't huge.
No, it's not huge. It wouldn't be,
like, it's not going to overtake your whole, I don't know if you're putting it in a terrace or a courtyard or something. It's not going to take up the whole thing.
No, it's not. It's not. It's definitely doable for like a small inner city garden. Absolutely. Mm. I mean, those large grow bags that we love. I mean, I feel like one of them would be half a meter. So
yeah,
go for it. You can also, of course, start it in a smaller pot, and then as it grows and fills that pot, you can replant the crown situation then. But when you think about the fact that when we plant it in the ground, we're planting them a meter apart, that kind of says the size that this thing is going to grow to. So do it if pots are all you've got. I think it's going to be very happy in the ground. And it actually looks quite nice all year round in the ground. So it's not – I think it really works with that. But, yes, pots are an option.
How deep would you say the pot has to be?
Well, I think the width is more important than the depth in this, as you probably – fathomed, but I'd say if it's half a meter across, we might be going absolute minimum 30 centimeters down, but probably more likely 50 centimeters down.
Yeah, but they're probably normal sizing.
Yeah, exactly.
That size of diameter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm not in the pot business, I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I mean, you don't often see, like, it'd be like a kid's paddling pool then, wouldn't it?
Okay, before we get into harvesting, what do we need to be worried about in terms of maintenance? Mm. Any pests, any snails, slugs like rhubarb?
Snails and slugs can definitely go for the rhubarb, especially in the winter months. But, you know, once the plant gets big enough, it's not really an issue. Like, I never do any pest control per se. I don't find an issue. Yeah, sure, sometimes the leaves have holes in them. But remember, we're not harvesting the leaves. We're not in the leaf business. We're in the stalk business. So I don't really care. Pests, not really an issue, but keeping the soil fed is going to be important. Every year, you need to give it a really good feed with the compost.
Mm-hmm.
It's set and forget as far as once it's there, it's going to be there forever. But if you want it to keep thriving, give it a load up of compost or animal manure, mushroom compost, mulch it with that once a year.
Yep.
Once a year, it's not a big ask.
And when we are adding compost to an established plant that's perennial, are we just putting it on top or are we digging it in and around the roots as well?
Just on top.
Okay.
Yeah. Especially with something as shallow rooted as this, if we tried to dig it in, we actually would probably disturb the roots. Mm. So we what's called top dress.
Okay.
It's just like add it on top and it'll go
Sounds
down.
Easy.
Yeah, exactly. It is easy. Like if that's the one maintenance thing I'm going to give you, I feel like that's pretty doable. If it goes to seed, it can kind of send up this like thin flower with – it's not really flowery, but it's like a stalk of wheat with little seeds on it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that because then the plant is putting its energy into creating seeds and reproducing. We want it to put its energy into stalk. So as soon as you see that, and you will see it during the warm months, just cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. Kind of like when our parsley goes to seed and we just chop it off.
Yeah.
Encouraging the growth. That's a maintenance thing. You're going to do that once a year too, I'm certain. If over winter your rhubarb dies back, like looks like it's died, it won't have. It'll just be going completely dormant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mine don't do this. My rhubarb stays looking good all year round, but I do know some other people's do. I don't know whether that's a temperature thing, although it's pretty cold where I am, or whether that's the varieties that I've got. But if it does die back over winter, don't stress. Early spring, possibly the end of winter, you're going to get those shooty uppies.
Should you trim back that dead foliage?
No, not necessarily. Like if it's, I suppose if it's like rotting into the garden, but if you didn't trim it back, effectively what you're just doing is composting in situ.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just kind of leave it there. But from an aesthetic perspective, it's probably not a good look.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll get rid of it.
When do you know that it's time to harvest?
You can harvest whenever you like, but the rule is literally 12 months of the year.
Oh.
But the rule is you can never take more than half the stalks on the plant.
Okay.
So you could harvest it early spring, but that might mean you're taking one stalk because the plant only has two. Whereas come summer and autumn, there might be 30 stalks on the plant and you can take 15 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason why I really like growing it, we didn't even get into all the benefits really at the start, but it's one of those crops that just happily hangs out until you want it, not like, I'm ready, eat me now.
Yep.
So that just makes life really easy because it's not like, oh, all of a sudden I've got to harvest all this rhubarb. It's like it can just sit there for a month and then you can come harvest it when you want it. So as little or as much as you like, up to half of the stalks.
Okay.
With the stalks and the leaves, I just want to make everyone aware that the leaves of the rhubarb plant are actually poisonous. The stalks are what we eat, which are the good bit. The leaves we absolutely do not eat, and we do not let our chickens, any other animals, eat them either.
In terms of composting, are they going in some kind of an open bottom compost as opposed to a worm farm?
Or worms I don't think the worms don't worry.
They're not bothered.
I don't think so, no. Okay. I put them in my compost, but not the ones that the chickens can get in.
Yeah, sure.
Having said that, though, the chickens have definitely been around my rhubarb plants and they have shown absolutely zero interest in eating them. So I actually think animals know that they don't want them. So I don't think this is a massive concern. I also don't think your dog is going to want to eat your rhubarb leaves either, but it's just a consideration that they are poisonous. In the same way potato leaves are poisonous. Like, there's quite a few plants that have a poisonous element that we just don't eat.
Mm.
But the rhubarb one, I think the leaves, they look like something you could put in the chicken pen. You know, these big green leaves. Yeah, they look like something that something would like to eat. No.
Isn't that a cool kind of evolution aspect to it, that it's developed this protection mechanism to protect its root, which is, or the stem, which is the, you know, the golden bit from
exactly what it's doing, and then nothing's going to come along and eat the leaves. Exactly. And we're just, you know, outsmarting it by getting our scissors and chopping the leaves off. So when you harvest, what you do, you don't use a knife or scissors, you don't cut a stem off. What you do is you pull the stem from the base of the plant, you pull and twist, and then the entire stem comes out. It has the end of it isn't a cut end. It's like a bit of a curved end where it's like joining to the plant. You want to do that. You don't want to cut it.
Okay.
Then you've pulled it out. You're going to have your long stem, your big leaf. You just cut your leaf off. The leaves, side note here, they're actually quite big and sturdy, and I quite like them as a mulch. So what I often do is cut the leaves, and I do all this standing at the rhubarb plant, cut the leaves off, and then I lay them around the base of the rhubarb plant, and then that just stops weeds coming up. So that's like a handy use. Yeah, it's kind of easier to do that than even walk them to the compost bin. When you're harvesting, another thing that comes up a lot, and you touched on this before, was the different colours, and you can have like green stalks. If you have green rhubarb stalks, this is not unripe rhubarb, this is simply a green rhubarb stalk. Like I said earlier, the variety will often change the color, so popular varieties have more of a red color because that's what people like. The growing temperature will also determine the color. So the same plant different times a year may give you a green stalk or a red stalk. Totally fine, cook it down.
That's cool.
Yeah, no problems whatsoever. If you're doing it in a pie and you want that quintessential red color, it's obviously not going to give you that. It's a green stalk. But as far as flavor goes, all good.
Can you harvest too early?
If you harvest too early, it's just going to mean the stalk is too small. So it's not too early if that's what you want, but it won't give you the yield that you could get if you waited a bit. I would say in the first spring after planting, especially if you've purchased a crown rather than getting one from your friend, because realistically the one you've purchased is going to be a lot smaller than the one I would give you, you're probably not going to be harvesting that rhubarb in spring. You're probably just going to let it really head up and form. Maybe late summer, early autumn will be when you start harvesting it. Like I said at the start, the first year it's going to be a bit modest. The second year you're going to be going nuts.
Anything else to add on harvesting?
No, I think the harvesting's pretty straightforward.
Can we talk about eating suggestions? Like, I know that you can, like, stew rhubarb and, I mean, I've certainly had that with porridges and things, and you can put it in a pie. What other options do you have for rhubarb?
It's not the most versatile vegetable.
You don't eat it raw?
No, you don't eat it raw. No. It's also a vegetable. Hilariously, despite the fact we often eat it like we would a fruit.
Yeah.
So when I first started getting my rhubarb, it was a lot of strudels, pies, stews, like stewed fruit, either in the oven or the stove or the slow cooker. that got a bit old after a while when you got 7 rhubarb plants. So the thing that I usually do with it now is I either make a jam with it, a rhubarb, raspberry and vanilla jam. It's also a really economical way to make jams because berries are quite expensive. And if you're growing them, obviously you're not paying the price, but to get enough berries to make jam, you need quite a lot. When you're growing rhubarb, you often have quite a bit of it and it can really bulk out jams quite easily. And it's got its own delicious flavor. And I often find jams are just too sweet. So the rhubarb kind of like gives it that tart mix to it. So rhubarb, raspberry and vanilla. I just use a vanilla bean. That's my favorite jam. So I make a lot of that in the warmer months. The other thing I love doing with it is making a savory chutney.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of Indian spiced chutneys with ginger and onion and rhubarb that make a really savory.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like whether it be like with a barbecue or on a cheese platter, it goes really well. You know, on a
like
sandwich.
I said, a quince paste.
Exactly. Really anything, you know, like with a savory chutney, you're putting it on everything and anything.
Yeah.
Even with curries, you can put it as like kind of adding a bit of sweetness. You put sultanas through it. You cannot. I mean, I sometimes go the Indian spices, but, you know, don't always have to. So, and I find as much as jam is great, it's not like I don't eat that much jam. I eat a lot more savory stuff. So having the savory option for the rhubarb chutney, I think gives it a lot more
uses.
Yeah. And once you make a batch, so when you've got heaps of rhubarb, you know, make a big batch of it. And then if you run your jars through a preserving unit, topic for another day, you can store them out of the fridge indefinitely.
Yeah, cool.
So that's also really handy. You can make like 10 jars at once and then like there's your year of chutney or there's your Christmas gifts or whatever it is. So that's probably my favorite rhubarb uses. Oh, in a cake as well. You know, you sometimes do like a yogurt cake and you'll put stone fruit in it or apple or pear or whatever.
Yeah,
you can just do the same with like slices, not slices, but like stalks of rhubarb.
Yeah.
If anyone's got other great suggestions, I myself would love them because
with 7 plants.
please send them through because any way I can use this rhubarb would be brilliant to know. Have you got any other suggestions?
No, I've got none.
None? Okay.
So the big question, is the juice worth the squeeze? This is where we look at the effort-reward ratio of today's topic. The categories are superstar, high effort, high reward. Completing this will make you feel like an absolute rock star. Best on ground, low effort, high reward. Quick wins and fill-ins, low effort, low reward. And finally, the wooden spoon, high effort, but not much reward.
Tess, I think this episode's been years in the making, given how many times you've seen my rhubarb plants, how many times we've talked about the prolific rhubarb plants. Now that you know a bit about what goes into them, how we're growing them, the maintenance, etc., what are you thinking as far as effort-reward ratio?
What I really like is that it's a perennial. It's a set and, you know, it's not set and forget because you still have some maintenance of the composting each year and then, you know, every 7 years you have to pull out, I mean, every 5 or 7 years you have to
pull it out
and split it. But largely,
yeah, as far as set and forget goes in the garden, this is about the best you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that, you know, that puts it on a low effort
absolutely
end
yeah.
of the scale, which I think is really great. I think that the actual process of digging it up and splitting it sounds like there's a little bit of effort involved, but you only do that once and then you've got your plant.
Yeah.
Or every 5 years and then.
Yeah. I mean, you know, once every 5 years.
Yeah. You just skip the gym that day.
Exactly.
Rhubarb isn't my favorite. I would have called it a fruit until right now. Isn't my favorite of the vegetables. Mm. I really like those ideas of having like a spiced rhubarb chutney or something like that. That's a cool idea. I like that a lot. But that, for me, dampens the reward factor a little bit. We always say this, you've got to grow what you like. And it's not one of my favorite things to eat. So, but you know what? I tried zucchinis and I don't love zucchinis and it's fun. You know, as a beginner gardener, a confidence booster,
That's a good point.
It's a fun thing to grow something that actually grows.
Mm. And that you actually can see and harvest quite reliably. You're right. Yeah. It's a good confidence booster for a beginner.
And maybe if you don't like it, you just turn all of your rhubarb into chutneys and gift it around to all your mates. Mm. Like
exactly, exactly. I think you're totally right. I mean, the effort is low, but the reward is also semi-low.
Because,
You know, like if you couldn't get to the supermarket for 2 weeks and you were just trying to eat out of your garden,
you're not munching down on some rhubarb.
No, you're not munching. You're not cooking a rhubarb for your dinner. So, yeah, it doesn't have as many applications, which does limit it, definitely. Mm. But the perennial factor, being a perennial vegetable, like can you think of another perennial vegetable? Like there's pretty much none.
No.
Except asparagus, but we'll do that another day. That's a bit harder.
So is it a quick win?
I am giving it quick win and fill in.
I like it. I can't remember the last quick win and fill in. No,
there's not many of them.
Yeah.
I think if you've got a decent whack of space in your garden, it's a no-brainer just to have one there.
Mm.
In a smaller garden, in yours, Tess, I feel like we could be borderline. Maybe that space could be used for something else. If you wanted a really reliable confidence boost that's there and looks good and all year round.
You know what? The fact that you can put it in a pot is great as well.
Mm.
I love pots. But I mean, the grow bags are something that I use, so I think it's fantastic because you can just move them around and it just gives you that extra garden space that you might not have if you live in a city.
Yeah, exactly, especially on like a carport or bricks or driveway or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I can't think of many other quick wins and fill-ins we've got. But
there we go.
Here's the rhubarb.
Rooting For You is hosted by Elise and Tess. You can find us on Instagram @rootingforyoupod or email rootingforyou@elisealexandra.com.